This is the House of Hockey podcast,
where we talk about the game and the lifestyle.
We've got opinions as hockey fans, friends, and from the female perspective.
Welcome to our house.
Welcome to the House of Hockey podcast. This is episode 178. Let me move my mic a little closer to my face. My name is Ray Ray. I'm one of your co-hosts. Breezy, as we know, is still on the long-term injured reserve list for the podcast. She's doing just fine, though. Today, no guest co-host, but we are having a guest, a returning guest, Frank Longo. He is a scout for the Kenai River Brown Bears in the North American Hockey League, hashtag Brown Bear Nation. He's also the owner of Gremlin Goaltending. I'll ask him to fill you in on what all that is that he is doing outside of this the scouting world. Frank was on episode 102, and at that time, he was an assistant coach and goalie scout for the varsity women's hockey program at Nipissing University. Did I say that right?
Yep. Yeah.
Pronunciations are not my forte here, as everybody knows as they listen. And he was doing goalie scouting and independent scouting and all kinds of stuff. So we are thrilled to have you back, and you're in a new position. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be back and have another chat here. So excited to get going.
Yeah. Tell me about this team that you are now scouting for. We were talking a little before we started. They're in Alaska. You obviously, as a scout, don't have to be physically in Alaska with the team necessarily for day-to-day activities. But what is this team all about, and what's their identity for people who don't know? And I mean, it's incredible in Alaska. You know, that seems like so far away and remote and different, even though it's part of the United States and it's, you know, right there by Canada. But what is that all about there?
Yeah, so they play in North American Hockey League, like you mentioned there, and they've been around, I believe, since 2007. So they're kind of one of the, you know, not older teams. That league's been around for a while, but they've been, you know, around for a decent while. So, you know, they get a good fan base, average around, I think, 2,500. A game, obviously not too much to do besides hunting and fishing up in Alaska. So, I mean, the whole town kind of rallies around them. And obviously you have the two other Division I schools there, University of Alaska Anchorage and Alaska Fairbanks. So a lot of hockey up in Alaska, which is great. It's good for the program. It's good for just the sport in general, just being able to get all the way up there, up north. But yeah, I'm the Canadian scout for Kenai River Brown Bears, and basically my responsibilities is not just the goaltending, but also players as well. So I'll be scouting, tier two junior A in Canada, because we're at that league where we're, you know, a little bit above, you know, Canadian junior hockey at this moment, not the OHL or the QMJHL or the WHL, but for tier two junior, it's definitely a step above. And, you know, we have players in, you know, the North American Hockey League that get drafted straight to the NHL. At the NHL draft. So, you know, it's kind of like a step below the NHL in a sense, with the USHL. And it's historically known for the NCAA Division I commits. So they get a lot of commitments out of this league. And actually, I had one of my clients, I think I mentioned him last time, was on the show, Greg Orzo. He's actually at University of Alaska Anchorage as a freshman. So he got a scholarship after I coached him at Stansted College in Quebec, played for Odessa and Aberdeen in the North American Hockey League, and then he got his scholarship. So just a kind of an example of, you know, a player that's moved through the process and got there. And it's definitely an exciting opportunity. Yeah,
that's exciting. Okay, talk to me a little. We'll stick with the scouting side of things, and then we'll go into some of your, like, all around player, you know, family coaching, helping, scouting, you know, stuff you do. But what are you seeing in those leagues now, as far as like style of hockey being played that's coming up, that's maybe different than what, you know, we're always talking about the differences between like the old school hockey and the new school hockey. And we see so much of it clash on the ice, and we see it work when it's done right. But, you know, I think people are like, that's the way the league's going to go in the NHL, where it's just going to be young, fast, and we're never going to have, you know, Ryan Reeves again or Pat Maroons, and just get over it. But like, is that really the case in what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think the game is definitely changing. I mean, physicality is not as prominent unless it's kind of, you know, playoff hockey. And obviously fighting is kind of, you know, fuzzling out. But I mean, I think it's just the difference in development in each country. If you want to go kind of down that world, you know, US hockey is a step above, definitely Canada. Hockey Canada is kind of faltered a little bit, and you can see with the World Juniors and, you know, our development teams, even, you know, the women's hockey side of things, you know, the U.S. is really catching up now over the last, I would say, 5 years. And, you know, they just have a better development model, just from starting from, you know, at 7, 8 years old to all the way to junior hockey. So, and college hockey. So, I mean, I would say the development, you can see the differences, you know, you see a lot more American born players drafted now than Canadian, or have success, I should say, at the next level. So I think that's a big thing. And I think the US has kind of taken, you know, a model of, you know, what Sweden's done and Finland's done and Russia, for example, because they've always had kind of these development models put in place over the last, you know, couple decades at least. And that's why I feel like, you know, US hockey's getting there development wise. And you see it with these prospects, you know, the most exciting players right now that, you know, have, you know, the best shots and the most accuracy, and, you know, are just so fun to watch, you know, the Austin Matthews, the Zegras, you know, Caulfield, all of them, right? Like, where are they from, right? And that's where you're starting to notice that they've developed in their own country, and they've gone to a point now where I think the game is a lot more quick. Obviously there's more agility to the game east to west, and we're getting you know, some pretty cool hockey players to watch in today's world, which makes it difficult to scout goalies, because, you know, these releases now and these shots are just so hard. So you can't even almost blame the goalie, but at the same time, you know, it is a clear view, you know, shot, and that's where you kind of decipher who's what goalie is, you know, ready for the next level in that regard with tracking these releases.
Yeah. And technology has advanced a lot too in the training, even for goalies as well. I mean, there's so many different kinds of, I don't even know what you call it, but there's like lights and different balls and headgear and things you can do to increase your reaction time and things like that. But I think that's really interesting to hear that perspective. When you say things are going quicker and faster, I think something that's really thrown a curve into fans' thoughts is the Matt Rempes of the world. The Rangers, right? You see, like, all of a sudden, we haven't seen a guy like this who's young coming into the league. Yeah, he might not be staying, you know, beyond playoffs, but he's gigantic and he's still got enough skill to be able to do this, but he's injuring people because of his height and his size, not necessarily on purpose, but just due to his nature, or at least that's what I want to believe about him. But I don't think he's doing anything malicious out on the ice, really. But what does that look like, though, then in the future? Like, how are we training these younger, faster skilled players to handle these big guys? Because, like, they're still going to be dealing with it, even just in size. Because if you're 18 and you're coming into the NHL, there's still guys on the team who are fully grown men, and you're still going to be dealing with some of that. What does that look like?
Yeah, I think with Rempe's situation, I think just being fearless at a young age, like, he's, you know, he's going toe-to-toe against the best in the NHL, and guys respect him for that. Obviously, a couple things happened afterwards where players lost respect for him. I guess there was a couple calls he ran after a few people. I didn't watch the game, but I heard about it on Twitter. But I think the courage for him is big. I think that he's able to go toe-to-toe at a young age. And you're not really seeing much of that, right? Because these players have so much on the line. You know, teams aren't drafting enforcers anymore. You know, they're looking for strictly, you know, guys that can play hockey. If you're going to last in the NHL, you know, the reason why, you know, maybe Ryan Reeves and, you know, a couple of those other players that lasted so long is because they're still able to play hockey. They're not just enforcers. They're still able to produce, even if it's, you know, 10 goals a season. And they produce that energy for players. So I think just knowing your role, especially in junior hockey, and there are some big guys that may not be as agile, might not have the best hands, but they're very smart, you know, with their hockey IQ, and they're not afraid to be physical. And that's when you can kind of fit them into those roles where they'll protect those superstars, you know, on the first and second line, and and step up when they need to. But you won't see guys come in as much as, you know, last decade or even before that, who were strictly there to, you know, kind of rattle up the crowd and defend their players. So I feel like it's just knowing your role and being confident that you can stand up for yourself and others. And having those type of guys on your team is crucial too, especially in the playoffs.
It is. It's hard to deny, though, how much the fans love the enforcers and the fighting and the Rempies of the world, though. Because, like, this kid blew up the internet and everybody is talking about him and nobody had ever heard of him before. And I think we crave that as fans, wanting still to see that in a game. I mean, will there still always be a place for it?
Yeah, I think there always will be a place. It's kind of the same thing as, you know, artists that have, you know, the one hit wonder, you know, they have two good songs and that's pretty much all they kind of produce. Like, that might be what his career is. You know, he hasn't really produced, you know, the in the hockey sense things. You know, he's also got the crowd, he's got his name out there fighting, but how long are you gonna, like, you know, be able to maintain that to keep a career in the NHL now? That's the question. I think him is, you know, focusing on actually playing the game now. He got his name out there. People are looking at him. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not saying this is what's happened so far, but if he starts, you know, being a minus three and, you know, every game and, you know, just can't keep up in the actual game itself, then I think that's going to hurt him. And you might see a guy like him fizzle out. Again, it's too early to tell. He has a lot of potential. Big guy. Obviously, they saw something in him. When they drafted him, it's just a matter of him getting back to that and being effective, right? Like, you have guys like Matt Tkachuk, right, in Florida. Like, that guy's a little pest. Brad Marchand, he's not very big, but he's a pest. But these guys can play hockey. That's the difference, right? They can get on your skin. They're not afraid to fight. But they can also play the game.
Yep. Those some of the qualities that you're looking for when you're scouting then for Kanai?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that, you know, in the North American Hockey League for scouting for that is I think it's, you know, I look a lot for character. That's the first and foremost. Like, I think that's the best trajectory to see where a player is going to go is, you know, what family they come from, how hard they work, you know, how are they in the classroom? Because obviously, like, our goal is to either get them drafted in the NHL and also try to get them an NCAA commitment. And you can't get to NCAA if, unfortunately, you don't have the grades or you don't really take school seriously or, you know, the stuff outside of the rink. So, you know, I like guys that, you know, get involved in the community, you know, or they work hard in school. They have, you know, aspirations and academically as well. And I think just how they are within their teammates, you know, are they a leader? You know, doesn't mean they have to be outspoken. They can be soft spoken, but, you know, just do they lead by example? Do they work hard? Do they put in those extra hours? I think that's the first thing I look for. And then, you know, we get into kind of, you know, the nuts and bolts of, you know, how they do statistically and how they progressed over the years. I think that's another thing that a lot of scouts kind of don't really look at it. They just kind of look at that current season. They're like, oh, wow, they're lighting up. But were they lighting up maybe the same league a couple of years? Like, maybe they need to move up, right? Or have they struggled and then progressed really well over the last 3 years in different levels, different age groups? It's all situational. But I think being able to see how far they've come, you know, in a 2-3-4 year span gives you an idea that, you know, they're progressing the right way because they're doing the right things off the ice and on the ice, obviously. But, you know, they're constantly learning and getting to where they need to be. And then you can kind of predict, hopefully they'll be an impact player when they come, you know, to the North American Hockey League or beyond.
Talk to me a little bit about the hockey culture. This is something that's really been on in the news, in the, you know, Hockey Canada stuff, and even in the NHL, we've seen a lot of recent, like, off ice challenges with people's character in playing hockey. And you talked about just how important that is to have a good character and be a well-rounded, committed, driven team player focus. Where does that go wrong, in your opinion? Like, how does that happen? How do these stories happen when the scouts and the teams are so focused on finding these really quality players that are team driven, right? Like, where is that disconnect, in your opinion? And if this is, like, too far out of the scope of where you feel comfortable, that's fine too. But I just think it's interesting that there's like a bit of a mismatch in some of the things that have been happening lately. And I think people want answers to why, you know, because this is a sport we love and we know how committed the teams are to really developing these young players and taking care of them.
Yeah, no, I have no problem talking about it. I mean, obviously not going in too much depth, but I think the biggest thing for, you know, these players, I think is, you know, a lot's thrown at them at a young age, especially, you know, with, the, you know, these players and the world junior teams and stuff. And there's a, you know, a spotlight on them at a young age. And sometimes it gets to their head, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say, you know, a cockiness, if you will, but, you know, it makes you not as level headed. And I feel like that can get you into trouble, right? And I think we see more of it, you know, with us both being in the hockey space, you know, that's what we're following. That's what's in the mainstream media for us, because that's what we're following. So we see a lot more of it with our sport, but I feel like it's in every sport. Like, you know, NFL players, the same things happen. Because again, they're getting all this money, they're getting all this fame at a young age, and it gets to their head. And then, you know, they might start treating, you know, females or males the wrong way. And you know, just and that's the thing, right? They just think they're kind of, you know, maybe a little bit above everyone else, and it's getting to their head. And then, you know, eventually, you know, you have to hang up the skates or hang up the cleats in football, and everything kind of comes back down. And that's you know, I think when a lot of them end up suffering mental health issues, and we can go down that world. But I think it's just being exposed at a young age and not having the maturity to be able to handle it, or maybe not having the right voices. And sometimes, again, like with these agents and parents and, you know, all this money and fame and everything getting thrown at you, it's hard to really navigate it. So then you end up, you know, resorting to, you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, doing the wrong things, and then you go down a wrong path. And I think, you know, you see the guys like, you know, the Sidney Crosbys of the world or Connor McDavid's, the reason why they're so great is even with all that fame at that young age, they stayed on task. They had a goal in mind, and they're still doing it, you know, at 27 or 37, like, you know, with McDavid and Crosby, right? They're still doing it even after accomplishing, you know, certain things in their career. So I think that's what you're looking for, is guys that don't let the hype kind of get to them. They have a goal in mind. They knew what they were doing when they were going into it, and they're sticking to it. And I think that's a big thing you want to look for as well.
How do you teach that and implement that into the players that you do scout? And then even in some of the work that you do outside of the scouting, how do you get that through a parent's head, or how do you get that through a player's head and him or her's head to teach them that this is like a really important lesson to learn and character to build and that kind of thing? Cause that's not something that you can just, that's something that has to be learned, I think, for a lot of people, because like you said, they are so young. They're so young. And when they get started, so many of them, and if they don't have the right influences around them, it can go sideways. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just finding what drives them. I think, you know, it gets a little deep, but when they get to that level, you kind of have to, it's sink or swim at that point. You got to go either down one path or the other. It's, you know, like, for example, if you're in your OHL draft year, or if you're in your USHL draft year, like there's certain paths. And I think it's, you know, the question I always ask my athletes, and sometimes it catches them off guard. I give them a couple of days, you know, think about it and write it down. And it's, you know, how do you want to be remembered in this game? Like, how do you want to be remembered? What legacy do you want to leave? Because the things you do off the ice is going to follow that legacy. And there's a lot of amazing hockey players that come through. Like, there's, unfortunately, not everyone's going to be Wayne Gretzky. Not everyone's going to be Sidney Crosby. But if you look at certain players, right, with what they do in their organizations, how much they, you know, they gave back to the community, or, you know, how they perform on the ice and how they help their teammates around them. And like, for one guy that comes to my mind just recently, you know, Jermona Ginla, right? Like, sure, do you think of him as one of the best players of all time? Probably not. Is he an exceptional player? Yes. Like, he's up there. He's just not in the top five, right? But the reason why Calgary loves him so much is what he did for that community, what he did for that organization, how hard he worked. I know they never brought back a cup, but they were so damn close. And that's just like one example of a player, right, that his legacy is what he actually did off the ice, just as much as he did on the ice. And that's kind of what you have to start thinking at a young age, is year by year, you want to keep producing those results where you're, and it's only going to help the organization, right? Like, you're producing these results for these players, these fans and these people that you interact with in the community that want to come and support the team more. And it gets more of a fan base going. Like, it's all kind of like a, a plan, right, in within the organization. And I think that those players that understand at a young age is the players you want on your team, because they have the skill set. They've done it before, maybe with a junior organization that's, you know, anywhere in North America or even in Europe. And then when they come to their NHL organization, they know what to do to keep it going.
And the thing is, not everybody's going to win a Stanley Cup. Those odds, which I don't have in front of me, are probably really low. And to be able to make a lasting impression and a legacy, not just on the ice without, I mean, we were talking about this with Henrik Lundqvist, like, he doesn't have a Stanley Cup, but the man is a legend for everything he does, right?
Yep, exactly. Yep. And that's what I mean, right? And even Luongo never won a Stanley Cup, right? And he's in the Hall of Fame already. And obviously, you know, he was amazing off the ice as well as on the ice, obviously, with his performances. But, you know, that's another example, right? There's a lot of guys, Curtis Joseph, you know, if we want to go really back a little bit there, right? Like, I know he's goalies, but there's a lot of players as well. We can go down the list, but that make an impact. They just couldn't seem to win the Stanley Cup, but they'll be remembered in their organizations for a long time because of what they've been able to do, right? So,
What do you think of that two goalie system that's played, like the AB goalie and system in the NHL?
Yeah, I personally like it. I think it's great during the regular season. You know, the game, like, I think we talked about this even 2 years ago, like, I think the game is getting really hard on goalies' bodies, especially the way it's played. With the post play, the RVH, you know, we can get all into the technical side of things with it, but really tough on the hips, tough on the knees, obviously ankles, and even mentally, right? You know, they play 82 games. I can't believe goalies used to play 72 games out of the 82, right? Like, you know, like, again, going back to Luongo, Kiprusoff, Brodeur, like, those guys played a lot of minutes. And I think having two guys you can trust, especially with injuries, where one guy's kind of on a cold streak, you can go back to the next. I think having two is really important. And then when you get to the playoffs, I think, you know, if one guy's, you have a good sample size too, right? That, you know, that they both split 50-50, it's 41 games each. You get a good sample size and who's really been, you know, the better goaltender throughout the season. And then you might start him game one. And if he goes on a tear, you just keep going with him. We saw with Colorado, right? A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, with Kemper and Frank, Pavel Fanku, I think is his name. He was the backup to Kemper, but he came in when Kemper got hurt with the stick in the eye, and he produced well and got them to the final. And then Kemper came back, and right. So sometimes you got to have, you know, 1A, 1B situation, or at least a guy that you can count on that when he can go and play in a playoff game. Right. And think it's definitely beneficial that teams, you know, have two solid goaltenders. And to be honest with you, I think you should really have three. You know, if you can have a third, you know, a guy that's really itching to get into the NHL, who's capable of playing, just hasn't got a shot yet, or, you know, is dominating the AHL. I think just in case for these injuries that do happen, and it's very prominent with these goalies in the NHL today, you know, to have somebody that can come in and also, you know, be reliable as well. So, that goes into the whole goalie scouting world, right? You want to make sure you have enough prospects on your goalie draft list, or, you know, your prospect pool, just in case, just like you would with the players, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, that system and how it works. And I think what a lot of the fans' reactions have been, especially in the playoffs, like you mentioned, is when the certain coaches, I can't remember which teams, but like certain coaches stuck to the, like, to the switching between the goalies in playoffs. And some people really had strong opinions about that and did not like that and wanted like the 1A goalie to always be in. Yeah. And I think their fans, of course, are quick to blame and say, like, whatever, you know, 1A is doing horrible. You should have 1B in that. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But I mean, your strategy from based on what you just said would be like, if you've got someone on a heater or is on a streak or is doing really well in net, you leave them in the playoffs. Is that accurate? Is that what you believe?
Yeah, I think like again, like, it's a sample size. If you split them, you know, even the 60-40, obviously there's a reason why that one guy is maybe playing 60, if it's contract reasons, whatever, of the 60% of the season. If he's played better historically over that season, you know, I think he should be getting at least get game one. And then again, it's a game in playoffs, it's a game by game. You reevaluate. You don't just say, you know, you're going with the one guy for the whole series. But again, it could also hurt you. And look at Minnesota last year, right? They did go with Marc-Andre Fleury, and I'm a big Fleury guy, and you know, he struggled a little bit, and then they didn't know what to do, and so they went back to Gustafsson, yep. And he struggled, and I think they got swept last year, from what I remember. So, you know, that and they were using both goalies, and they just couldn't seem to figure it out to even get a win. And I think that's where it gets kind of tricky. Is like, it's making, so if you start one goalie in game one, and then you know you make the decision to go back to him in game two, and he loses again. That's when it makes it a really tough decision. What are you going to do in game three? You're going to go back with that goalie who's played, you know, 70% of your games all year, or are you going to go with, you know, the 1B? And then if he loses and everyone's, you know, so it is a really tough choice as a head coach. As back in the day, you know, you had your one guy, no matter how bad it went, you're going back to him. But again, even Boston, right? Like they've had had the best goalie tandem for the last 2 years, but last year in the playoffs, they got knocked out, right? In game seven to Florida. And again, they were kind of going back and forth with Swayman and Ullmark. So it can hurt you, but I also think it can benefit you. And we haven't had enough of a sample size since teams are starting to do this. But again, like I said, Colorado worked for them, you know, Pittsburgh with Murray and Fleury. You know, that's been almost a decade ago. It's crazy to think that. But, you know, I think you're starting to see some teams, right, doing it more. And I think in the next 5 years, you might get an idea. Does it actually work? And I believe it does. But I definitely like seeing one guy kind of go with the horns during the playoffs, unless, you know, something happens.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree with you on that. You know, give the guy who's the healthiest mentally, physically ready to handle the pressures of it and give them the opportunity, even if they take a loss in one of the games. I think it's important. It was depending on the player's mentality and their mental state, right, too. Like if they thrive on wanting to recover from a loss and prove they can win and different things like that, you know, I think it all depends. Because as we know, goalies are a unique breed. You mentioned Fleury. And I wanted to get your thoughts on like Fleury and Quickie, both of them still in this league, still able to perform at a pretty high level, pretty consistently, at least this season. What are your thoughts on those two and what separates them apart from the other ones? Obviously a little bit of luck with being able to be healthy and still play, of course, but what else is it that those two guys have?
I think just the commitment to their craft. I think, you know, they're always looking for new ways to get better. And they're going with the times of the game. They're not kind of stuck in their ways, but they still bring in their unique style. So they will adapt to what the game has become, but they will also still keep doing what's made them successful. And I think that takes a lot of, you know, reconstruction, you know, a lot of evaluation in their game each offseason. You know, Jonathan Quick looked like he was done, right? But, you know, he come into New York and, you know, Benoit Allaire, the goalie coach there, he's, I think, arguably the best of all time, if not one of the best. And, you know, he's transformed them. And he's done great work with Igor Shesterkin and Lundqvist, right? The list goes down. Cam Talbot, all those guys, right? And I think that, you know, again, he's reevaluated his game, but he's still the same old Quick. You know, he's still very athletic, covers the bottom net well, can still make those spectacular saves, and he tracks really well. And the same with Fleury, right? Like he still plays a very athletic game, and that's what you just said, which is crazy. Is like, you know, they're still doing the splits, and they're, you know, they're getting up there in age, and they're still playing the same way, and they're still performing. And it's because they're not going to shy away from what made them successful in the first place. But again, you see they're a little different now in, you know, their post play, and you know they're a little more conserved around the crease, and that takes, you know, work with your goalie coach, a lot of video, and understanding why you're going to be making those changes. And I think that's for them, you know, they're not as stubborn as maybe some other guys have faded out of the league is, you know, this is the way I play. This is the way I've been my whole career and I'm not changing it. And you know, those are the guys that unfortunately get left behind, but guys like Fleury and Quick, you know, they're both Hall of Famers. Quick is tied with Miller now for the most wins in the American goalies. So if he wins his next game, which, you know, he'll probably have at least a few cracks at it before the season ends, you know, he'll be number one, the best American born goalie. I already think he is. He's won three Cups, Miller number one. Right. So we can go down that whole debate, but you know, you have two Hall of Famers that are still doing it. And there's a reason why they're doing it. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair assessment on those two, especially that just that sort of commitment and that mental strength and love and passion and remembering their purpose and what they want to leave their legacy, like you said.
Yeah, that's
a good example of what you were describing earlier. Do you want to talk about the PWHL and the women's side, since you've been around the women's game a lot as well? First of all, have you been to a game yet, PWHL game?
No, unfortunately I haven't, but I do watch a lot of it on TSN. My girlfriend has a family friend who plays for Ottawa, PWHL Ottawa, Zoe Boyd. So, you know, usually when Ottawa,
they're crushing it right now.
Yeah. So when they're on the TV, we like to, you know, watch and support her. And I think, again, it's great for the game, you know, seeing these massive crowds and, you know, seeing these players being able to actually live out their dream. I think that's what a lot of us that were involved in the women's game are still involved. That's what we're hoping for. And it's here now and it's exciting. And I think it's still kind of surreal to think, like, you know, on a nightly basis, there's, you know, professional women's hockey on TV and it's commercials and, you know, there's sponsorships. Like, it's just, to me, it's exactly what we were hoping for. And I'm so excited for the players and the coaches in the league. And, you know, I hope continued success for them. Obviously, I think it's going in that direction and it's very exciting, the game of hockey.
The women's game has different rules and I think it's okay. And I think so many people are like hung up on like, well, they can't hit as hard. I'm like, it doesn't matter because it's still just as exciting to watch and see what they can do without all those other things. And we've now gotten players who've gotten suspensions for like bad hits and for like fighting and stuff. In the league, like, it's happening and it's still just as exciting. So what do you say to those haters who are like, who don't get it? Because I don't think people get it yet.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just the passion, right? Like, I think the reason why we all fall in love with the game, obviously, is, you know, our connection to the game. Obviously, we all have a beginning to it, or we're connected to it. And I think it's just the goals and you know, the big saves, the big goals, you know, an amazing play that happens, right? It's not so much about the physicality. Like, sure, the physicality makes it exciting, but I think it's really just the game of hockey in general. And I think these girls, you know, they're exceptional athletes, and they're some of these goals are incredible. Like, some of these shots are just, you know, like, they're bar down, posting in, you know, great special teams. Like, these girls are blocking shots, and, you know, these goalies are making big saves on a 5-on-3 on a one goal game. Like, that's the exciting part of the game. And I think that's what we need to focus more on. And I think, honestly, some of these rules you might see in the PWHL might even translate into the NHL one day, right? Because some of them are pretty cool. I don't know them, and I don't know why. I don't know them to a certain extent, but I heard that, you know, the overtime rules are pretty cool. And, you know, I saw on Twitter they might, you know, NHL start doing them. And I haven't really been able to look too much into the PWHL overtime situation there. But, I mean, they're saying it would be something cool for the NHL to kind of look into. So I mean, that's just an example right there, right? That, you know, they're maybe beyond the time of hockey as of right now, and it might even start going in that direction with all leagues in hockey, professional leagues in hockey. So
yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was such a fun experience, and watching them play and their skill was unreal to see. I think it's a little bit different. I talk about this too, like, in the U.S. media than in the Canadian media. You know, you've got games on TSN there. We've got them on some of our local channels, and yeah, they're on YouTube for free, which is great because, like, we have no excuse not to watch. But I think just sort of that national exposure that you guys get, and of course, I think hockey, of course, is way more popular in Canada across the board than it is in the US. So you've got that going for you. And I just think the Canadian teams have done such an incredible job of promoting it and having them do like the Oilers do that, like, in team skills competition thing. And I think Ottawa does, and they had the women come and they were part of it. And I think just the exposure to it is great. But we're seeing small things here, like the Anaheim Ducks of all the teams were like wearing the jerseys and is into walk-in the other day. So we're seeing it, and I just want to do what I can to promote it, because I think it's
100%
really exciting.
I think the, you know, JT Comper and his sister, they did something where, you know, they played the same day, and he wore her jersey into the rink and she wore his, and I know a few more of his teammates also wore her jersey. So I think it's cool that, you know, you see the NHL and NHL players and PWHL players, you know, kind of supporting each other. Because again, it's the same game. Sure, there's a couple of rules that might be a little different, but at the end of the day, it's the same game, and you know, that's what we all love. And again, I think it's great that, you know, they continue to grow it that way and get, you know, these phenomenal athletes, their names, right? Those are the ones on the back of those jerseys. Actually, on the bottom of those jerseys, I don't know if you saw, again, you're
yes.
in the States, right? The Molson Canadian, right? They put their sponsorship on the top bar to, you know, for everyone to see their names on the bottom. I think that's, you know, incredible marketing on number one. But number two, I think that's incredible for the game too. So now we can see, you know, these incredible players and who's actually making these plays and, you know, hopefully getting those jersey sales up for them too. So.
Exactly. I am super excited to see what the team names are. I still haven't like officially picked a team yet. I'm still undecided. I'm still trying to decide who's going to be my team because I don't have a Chicago team. So I don't have a default. And I live close to Boston now, but I'm just not sure, but I'm leaning towards Boston only because of Hillary Knight, but I'm conflicted and you don't care about this. This is just my internal fan.
You can be a PWHL Ottawa fan if you want. There you go. Then yeah, that's my team. If we're going to talk about the PWHL, obviously it's the team I watch the most again, because of Zoe Boyd, but, right. Again, it's, that's a team I cheer for. So I mean, something to think about.
I know. Yeah. It's a big decision though, Frank.
It's true. Yeah. Cause I know you're a Blackhawks fan, right? So.
Yeah. I have this like free slate, this like opportunity to pick.
Yeah. A lot of pressure.
Stressing me out. Just right now. I can't think about it. I can't talk about it anymore. It's making me really anxious. I don't know what to do. Tell everybody a little bit more about your Gremlin goaltending and what you do for players and families and how you help them.
Yeah, so you know, I work with, you know, different, you know, AAA organizations around, you know, the Greater Toronto Area. That's where I'm located now. So, for example, you know, coaching, you know, different teams in different areas. Again, you wouldn't know where they are, so I won't get too deep. But they're AAA programs and. You know, I'm a part of their goaltending development, so you know I'll be their goalie coach for the season, and you know, building those partnerships within the communities again, you know, kind of help, you know, goaltending development in Canada, even if it's at a small scale, again, just in the Ontario kind of Toronto area, but you know, it's something, and a lot of time, you know, goalies have coached in the past, you know, from all these years of coaching, the last I think it's like 13-14 years now in Quebec and. In North Bay and everywhere that I've been, that I've scouted and coached for, I think I still keep in contact with these goaltenders, and you know, I kind of give them kind of like their gatekeeper, if you will. Like I help them kind of navigate their next steps, and you know, they still come to me for advice on, you know, where you know, what would be the best program for me to go to next, if that's junior, if that's, you know, university program. You know, maybe they're struggling mentally throughout their season, they're in a slump, you know, they might give me a call, we'll jump on a Zoom call, go through video. So it's just keeping tabs on the goalies I've worked with and making them feel like they're not alone. Cause I know I felt that way when I played. And again, it was a totally different, hockey world back then. Goalie coaches didn't really exist as much. And, they didn't really have the tools as we do now, which is again, you know, they're the kind of the pioneers. So you have to respect that, but. You know, for them not feeling like they're on their own, because again, a lot of the head coaches and assistant coaches don't know goaltending. They don't know how it feels to be in their position. So to have somebody that they can, you know, call upon, and you know, I'm not there to take their money. Like this is just, again, relationships. This is, it's free. This consulting and family advising. You know, I'm not one of those family advisors that, you know, if I get you to a program, you know, I charge you a stupid amount of money to do basically nothing. For me, it's I want to help grow the game. I care about each and every goaltender that I built a relationship with, and I want to help them get to the next level. So I'll do whatever I can with my network, obviously, you know, with what I've learned over the years from my mentors, and you know, hopefully I can put it into their game, even if it's through video or just from a phone call to help them kind of get out of that slump and also get to the next level.
I think that's great what you do. So if people want to connect with you, I'll put your links in the show notes so they can connect with you on Twitter or your website and get in touch with you if they're interested in working with you. And
yeah, for sure.
I think we've covered it all.
Yeah.
We've covered a lot. So yeah. Thank you for letting me ask all my millions of questions about everything to do with all of the sport. It's really nice to talk to somebody on the inside of the game and who's seeing things up front and get your opinions and thoughts on the game that we all love. So thank you, Frank.
No, thank you again. Yeah, I appreciate your time. The game's always changing, so there's always something to talk about.
Thanks for coming over to our House of Hockey podcast and hanging out with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Just look for House of Hockey podcast. We'll be back next week.